Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. When it's time to get some new windows or a new door, you gotta go with Pella. Why? Well, first of all, because they can provide window and door solutions to any home. And the people are great. Steve and Vince and Clint and Brian, the whole gang, everybody there is fantastic. And you know what? You're going to be with Pella the entire time. I had no idea this was the scenario and the situation, but I didn't know when you work with some other window companies, I won't name names, but all of a sudden questions pop up like, well, who's installing that? No, you got to call that guy. Who's going to pre-finish it? No, you got to call that guy. Before you know it, you're working with like four or five different people. Ugh, you want the convenience and simplicity of working with one company, not three or four. That's Pella. Check them out on the web, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Well, on tap for today's pod is an event that everyone's been looking forward to because we've been so sports starved with the coronavirus situation and everybody quarantined and life being canceled kind of as we know it. And thank God for The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls final season documentary. Going to be a 10-part documentary series dropping every single Sunday, 2 hours each of the next 5 weeks. And yours truly and Beau Rude, we sat and watched the documentary together and immediately went into the pod studio and knocked out a recap pod to what is shaping up to be an incredible documentary. I mean, just an incredible one. So without further ado, man, let's get to it. Enough yapping for me. Let's get to a little recap pod for the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls Last Dance documentary. Here is your boy, Nicholas Allenbaugh and Beau Robert Rude. Enjoy. All right. I don't even know where to begin. Nick Bob, Beau Rude. We just finished the first night of the Last Dance Michael Jordan documentary. So part one and part two are in the books. And we watched it together. It was hard. You can tell there are numerous times I wanted to hit pause and like almost recap a sec. Like anytime they went to commercial, you and I really had to fight the temptation to talk.
I think we had to fight the temptation to grab a basketball and, you know, go dunk on the mini hoop.
What did I tell you? When we stood up and it was over, I said, I just want to go compete with Michael Jordan. That's all I want to do. Man, I guess. You know, you go into this thing and you wonder, okay, what's the structure going to be like? What's the format? How are they going to do this? I think the first thing that jumps out at me is just the unfathomable nature of how here's a team. This is the Chicago Bulls. You know, they have five championships, and just the fact that it was understood that this shit is over. Like, this is it. Phil is done after this year. It's unbelievable to, even though we all kind of knew it going in, just to see it all really happen. They're getting rings, all that stuff. And just the thought that, like, heading into the season, like, think, I want people to really think about that. Like, these guys are, they're the greatest basketball team ever. And yet, it's just, it's, everybody wants it. Like, everybody is ready to be like, yep, this is, it's done. It's over.
Yeah, that, it was almost, I could feel us both, you know, we were trying not to talk to each other, but I could feel us both just being frustrated that, like, looking back on it, you know, that was some of the stuff that we didn't remember as well. I think being, you know, young, we were probably, you know, teenagers at the time, mm-hmm. but, you know, we loved watching the Bulls. But to hear sort of the beginnings of the management, like, voluntarily wanting to potentially get rid of, you know, the coach, Scotty, and rebuild the team, and like it's almost unfathomable, like how that can happen.
Yeah, I just don't. You're winning, you know. Jordan had that line. It was like you're. He's like, until we have the right to defend our title until we lose. Like when we lose, then yeah, then you can talk about rebuilding. Like it's just it's crazy to me to think that that team, that management, it really Jerry Krause.
Yeah.
And the one thing the documentary is doing a nice job of is there are two things that are getting laid out. There is you know, we're picking things up in the 97-98 season, and they're flashing back with these flashbacks to understand how Michael Jordan became Michael Jordan. But the other, in the midst of that, the thing they're doing a nice job of is explaining how the deterioration and all the issues manifested themselves over the course of a decade between Jordan and Krause, and then ultimately Pippen and Jerry Krause.
Yeah, but it's still, to me, it's like it's glaring. No matter, even if there's truth to some of the things that Krause and Reinsdorf are saying, their perception of their role and their importance is that, to me, is the biggest crime that happens too much in sports, is when you have these great players and great organizations, great teams, and the people at the top don't give the respect to sort of the magic that happens with these teams and these runs people have. And I think that in the long run, it's always better to give them too much time and let them fail first before, like, the preemptive destruction. You know,
right,
it,
right.
It's this might be, and we're going to see more and more as this goes, the greatest example of, like, are you serious? Like, why would you do this?
Yeah, and yeah, it just goes to show you, I think what you're watching, the thing that's amazing is, as you're watching this unfold, I mean, we're not even in, I mean, the second episode ended, and Pippen just demanded a trade, and it's November of 97.
Yeah, we're going,
you know
what
I mean? So it's like, we're not even in it, but one of the things that you're seeing is how much we sometimes come at basketball from an analytical standpoint of, like, well, they need a rebounder, they need more shooting. They have, like, so much of basketball is chemistry, ego, management, personalities, all those things. Yeah. And I think as much as anything, this documentary is heading down a path of the illustration of that, where what derails greatness or ends greatness as much as anything else is self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that, you know, they're doing a nice job, though, of laying out, like, I will say this. It's incomprehensible, as we just laid out, what Jerry Krause, like, how Jerry Krause is handling this and the thought of wanting to blow it up and all that stuff. But, like, it is pretty amazing. And this is what happens when you're playing, when, you know, when God is on the team and Jordan. No one ever gives Jerry Krause any credit. Like, if I could play, if I could argue on behalf of Jerry Krause for a second, like, the guy did, like, you got to hand it to him. Like, you know, he got Phil, he drafted Scotty, he made all these trades. They talked about the Oakley trade for Cartwright. Like, he did a good job.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but his understanding of what he had, though, was misguided, right?
Totally.
So anybody that has the greatest basketball team in the history of the league, pretty much, right? You get one of those. You get one Boston Celtics. You get one
Lakers.
You get one Chicago Bulls dynasty, right? Like, you get one of those in your franchise. You'll never probably get that again. And so I think you sacrifice everything to keep that alive, even if it's one more year, always trying to get one more year. You always do that because the idea of rebuilding, I think that's like fool's gold, right? Like, that doesn't, you'll never get that again. You'll never have Michael Jordan again. You'll never have all those pieces that together were magic. You never get that again. No matter how much you rebuild, like, it won't be that. So, like, you expend everything to keep what you have. And I think there's too much, like, and this is proving it, too many times where these people who are general managers and owners that they just don't understand that that's once in a lifetime.
Right. I'm not, let me restate. I'm not defending what Krause did. What I am doing is trying to give him credit for what he built.
Yeah. And they said he's actually a good guy. That's, people forever said he's, like, a terrible person,
though. Right. But it is, I guess, because that's how the whole thing starts, is you're just, you know, you're sitting there like, how, think about, this is, They are on the top of the mountain. They've won five championships. And how is this falling apart? How is it possible that Phil Jackson has a handbook for the 97-98 season entitled The Last Dance? Like, it's just remarkable. Now, they're doing a good job of laying out how you're beginning to kind of understand it, but it still doesn't take away from the shock value of it.
Yeah, and I think we should definitely keep in mind throughout this, you know, we might have to circle back, you know, as we do these recaps, you know, with the Golden State situation.
I was just going to say,
kind of similar, right? Like, it's these selfish personalities that seem to derail and not understand what you have.
You get one. Like you said, you're lucky.
Cherish it.
These things come about. How many in the history of basketball?
It's the Celtics. It's the Lakers of the 80s. It's the Bulls of the 90s.
And then the Warriors had a chance to really kind of like also be that. Because I was wondering, it's funny you brought up, and we'll stay on the Bulls here, but I wondered what a guy like Kevin Durant thought watching that. Where it's like, when you let ego and worrying about where credit gets delved out.
Yes.
When you are in the credit business, it's a fucking bad business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a bad business. And there were too many people, Jerry Krause, Scottie Pippen a little bit, like got caught up in the credit business. And then you think about the Warriors and you think about KD, you think about Draymond a little bit. Like, you realize, like, now I guarantee you, looking back on that, you know, I bet Jerry Krause regretted that. I bet Scottie Pippen regrets that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And, you know, I'm going to put, like, Reinsdorf, to me, though, like, where he doesn't get away from this in my book because he empowered Jerry Krause.
Yes.
Like, he could have stepped in and be like,
dude,
look,
what are you doing? You know, like,
hey, Scottie Pippen.
Right.
Keep Phil. Like, we're keeping Michael Jordan happy because he's Michael Jordan.
Yes.
He is, you know, God as a basketball player. Like, just don't mess with that. Let Michael play till he tells us, I don't want to play anymore. But, like, don't push Michael out. Don't push Phil and Scottie out.
Just say
like,
it out loud. Don't do it. Just think about what you just said out loud. An individual pushed the five-time champs, soon to be six, Phil, Scottie, MJ, pushed them out the door.
Because he thought it might be a good time to rebuild. Like,
but that's all, you're in the credit bit. You know, it's just this almost The Last Dance should be just like a cautionary tale. And again, we're only two episodes into this thing. It's striking me as a cautionary tale of the problem of a big, arrogant ego.
I mean, we all got egos, but
totally. And we all want to feel appreciated. And we all,
like, you know what? To appreciate what you got is one of the gifts in life. And this is such a clear, clear episode of losing so much touch with appreciating that you have the greatest team of the decade. And
they're probably the most revered and loved team of all time.
Of all time, globally. Like, yes. You know, it's hard for me to fathom, you know, somebody that, I know I always appreciated the teams I was on. So, like, it's hard for me to fathom what these guys could be thinking.
It's unbelievable. Well, and the thing that the moment I liked, and I asked you about it in the moment because I wanted to make sure I heard it right. I mean, at the ring ceremony to start the 97 season, the United Center booed Jerry Krause.
Yeah. Because he was trying to run Pippen out.
I mean, just like, so, you know, think about First Take and sports talk radio in 19, you know, like Stephen A. Smith, like, we got to talk about Jerry Krause and the fact that he's trying to run out the five-time world champions, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. Are you kidding? You know, like, think about these storylines.
It's almost, they were lucky that they didn't, I mean, even though they were a global phenomenon, some of those things, I think, came and went, like the Pippen almost, like, it got kind of swept under the rug as the season went on and you didn't hear about
the demanding a trade and all that.
Which is weird, but like, those are hard to survive now. Like, you know, KD and Draymond got into a slight bicker. The media was going to divide him after that. So
think Pip. I mean, it was understood Pippen waited until the start of the season to have surgery. Pippen then demands a trade. Krause announced that this is going to be Phil Jackson's last season. Like, think of all, like, it's just, it's, we all knew these things happened, but yeah. it still is surreal to see them play out the way they're playing out.
I, you know, these are things I kind of knew, but you just think about how great the teams were. So that was maybe the most glaring takeaway from the first two was just, oh my God, they were trying to end it. Like, management was trying to run these guys out. Like, even
it's unbelievable.
That, like, even having that on the table, that was the takeaway for me. Was I can't believe why you'd want to do that.
Think if it's unbelievable. It's truthfully unfathomable to think about that stuff. But the one thing that I'm just there's sometimes you're watching a documentary and not only are you interested in the subject, but you're loving the execution of it.
Yeah.
I will say so far, I'm absolutely loving how they're structuring this because you're getting these flashbacks. And not only is it's not just a flashback because it's cool to see Jordan play for North Carolina and hear Roy Williams talk about recruiting him and all that stuff, but it matters because it helps you understand the point of the documentary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not just a cool flashback for the sake of a cool flashback. What was, of all the I guess let's start with, because we kind of flashback to Jordan upbringing and Pippen's upbringing. What you want to start? You want to stay with Jordan?
Let's stay with Jordan.
Did anything in particular really like amaze you with the flashbacks of Jordan? Because you had his childhood flashbacks, and then you also had it's 19. He just finished. He got knocked out by the Celtics in 86.
Yeah. So, to kind of follow the theme you said, like I think this documentary is giving us everything we want, which is like sometimes you're like, it's kind of weird almost when you're getting exactly what you were hoping for. They're shooting this exactly how I was hoping.
This is like, so far I'm like, this is perfect.
It's giving you the unprecedented access of the 97 season, plus it's giving you Jordan history documentary, right, that we've always wanted. And they're giving you these clips that you've never seen before, right? From both the season and from just, you know, growing up or the past. And everybody that, you know, they're talking about is actually on this documentary with recent comments. So it's really so far very well done, which I like.
I think one of the things that is cool and even though we know a lot about these things, everybody knows the story of Jordan was cut from the varsity team and blah, blah, blah. We know about that, this stuff, but like hearing it from him, hearing it from his mom, hearing it from his brother, like I think, and the older you get, you know, you hit a point in your life and you go, why, how did I become who I am?
Yeah.
And we're doing a big time deep dive in how the not just the greatest basketball player of all time became the greatest basketball player of all time, but how he became arguably the greatest competitor, winner, sports attitude of all time. I heard he wasn't on camera, so I didn't see what it was. Someone at the start of the documentary said, I'd argue Michael Jordan was better at his job than anybody has been at their job in the history of life.
Jobs. Yeah.
Like, you know, jobs. And you it's just, you think of Jordan and they humanized him in a really cool way with how cool was the scene of the letter he wrote to his mom.
Oh yeah.
The letter, I mean,
no question. Well, you know what it is that's really cool about this too on that point is Michael's being more candid than I've ever seen.
Yes, this is
with his answers. You could tell he's like getting a little bit more emotional. Like
right.
He's telling the things that for a guy that's as famous as anyone in the world withheld all those little tidbits, and I feel like he's given a little bit more here, which is really cool to see.
It's so cool. I mean, you hear him talking about racism.
He never broached that subject.
But obviously, a black kid growing up in North Carolina, in the 60s and the 70s, there's going to be a lot of racism. And you could tell that sports became like his safe haven from all that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, like he talked about some of this, like I didn't have to be that on the baseball field and on the basketball court. And it also is amazing to think that a lot of his competitive drive and that spirit simply came from bickering with your brother and wanting your dad's attention.
Well, Larry Jordan was more competitive than Michael.
I mean, think about that.
That tells you something about Larry Jordan.
Well, and hey, I thought, hey,
if Larry Jordan walked in here,
Larry's like, crazy.
Larry is insane if he's more competitive than Michael Jordan.
But Jordan had I thought one of my favorite parts was when he talked about how when you compete, and we've all been to this, you have a brother, I have a brother, even like you and I are basically brothers. Like, when you compete and basically come to blows with someone you truly love,
that is
taking your heart and your mind and your soul to a different place. You know what I mean? When you can straight up like drop the gloves and Bo and Barrett Root are going at it.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, we're going at it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's something that sparked there. I'm not advocating all brothers go compete against each other and kill each other, but like at the same time, like,
hey, I relate to it. I'm a little brother, you're a little brother, and growing up for us, I mean, it was every time we competed, it was do or die. And so like when I see that with Mike and, you know, him saying that, you know, to just get his dad to want to, like, you know, look at him instead of like his brother getting to work with his dad in the garage, like that was his life's goal. Like,
but I think that's the cool part about
crazy.
This is Michael Jordan, who in our mind is like, he's a fictional character. You know what I mean? Like he's a superhero. He's in some people's minds, like Jordan is filed in that part of your brain that you file Superman, Batman. Like he's indestructible, and indestructible people don't have like human emotions. And it's pretty amazing to like listen back to how that he wanted his dad's attention, that a lot of it can, you know, like, I just think that all those flashbacks are really well done in that regard.
Did you know that he was as good as he, I don't even know how to say this. Like, I didn't think people thought he was as good as he actually was at North Carolina. And now they're showing that, like, everybody knew he was there.
See, that's the thing. I'm glad it's weird you say that, because that was one of the things I wrote down. Was I thought one of the other quotes that was like, holy shit, Bob Knight coaching Michael Jordan in the 1984 Olympics called him the greatest basketball player he's ever seen. Think about that for a second. This is a kid that's not played 1 second in the NBA. We're in the peak of Bird Magic, right? Where they are at, like, basically the peaks of their powers, or they're entering into the prime of what they've done. We've already had Wilt. We had Kareem. We've had Russell. Like, and here's Bob Knight. And Bob Knight is also, you know, like a guy that is.
He's a hard judge of character. He doesn't deal out praise very easily.
No,
right?
For him to say that, but I'm with you. Like, I guess. I always felt like Jordan was good. I mean, he was a McDonald's All-American. He was the player of the year in college. But I didn't necessarily think that he hit the ground running and had everybody's attention like, this guy's the fucking best.
Yeah.
The way he clearly did. I mean, he talked about his rookie year, third game of the season, he willed his team to a win and basically became the alpha male. You know?
That was... Probably the other part of the documentary that I enjoyed the most was two things Michael said. One was, first day of practice, he sought out whoever the best player was, and I'm going at him. Like,
right.
That mindset, one, is like, That's not normal.
Not normal. As a rookie, I mean, you've been a rookie in professional sports or a freshman in college. Like you
know what your mindset is? Survival, not right. not like attack and murder.
Or
like
getting good graces with whoever the alpha is.
He's a killer. That's a killer mindset, which is unbelievable. I mean, it was so cool to hear that. The second thing was another like competitive psychological thought was, you know, they're talking about Scotty sitting out because of the injury. And Michael's trying to let people understand that you can't let anybody get confidence against them. You know where, did you write that down?
I wrote it down. the quote was, because Scotty didn't play in the first month. The quote was, and I might be, I tried to immediately go to my notes on my iPhone to get it. Every day Scotty doesn't play, it gives other teams confidence they can beat us. This is a guy that is like a maniacal serial killer on the basketball court.
It's awesome. It's so cool to understand like that guy's mindset because so much of sports is confidence, and I think him being the killer he was, he understood that maybe better than anybody else because he never lacked it.
Right.
And he knew how to take it from you and basically never let you get it back.
He was that rare combination, and Tiger Woods had like was it too that are the most like they have all the physical talent in the world, and then they are psychologically on another level. Like to understand that in October these games he's won five. You know how many guys that won five rings would be like gives a shit. You know, like I'll.
You knew everybody.
Everybody would.
Everybody
like,
would not care because they'd be tired and they wouldn't care.
But his thought was, we can't let anybody see any vulnerability with us because he understood that. And people talked about it all the time, like Jordan had that aura, and a lot of great ones have it. That he had you beat, or his team had you beat because in your head you didn't think you could
because you know what, Nick, you shouldn't be able to beat Michael Jordan cuz he's better than you,
right?
So like until you do it you don't believe it,
right?
Cuz he's Michael Jordan, and it that part, like that's the stuff that it like you kind of understand Michael Jordan's competitive growing up. You understand that like he's very confident, but you don't understand his psychology. And that was what I thought was really cool.
Totally agree. Because, I mean, this is a guy that had won five championships. He was already, like, not, he's not on the mountain. He is the mountain. He is, like, there's no, like, that he's in his, what would have been his 13th or 14th year in the league.
Yeah.
And it's October. And you saw him in practice giving it to Kukoc, giving it to Harper, giving it to these guys. Like, and that comment, like, that's what he was thinking about. Like, I don't want to be like, guys aren't built like that anymore, but they kind of are. Like, maybe no one ever in the history of life was built like this.
It's
to be that driven.
Well, it's such a rare combination. You know, Bob Knight said it in that quote. He says he's the most skilled. He's the most athletic and he's the most competitive, right? He's the best I've ever seen. So like you kind of have to be a lot of those to get to that level of confidence. I think you have to have most, like you can't be that confident if you don't have most of those things, right? Like a lot of people are just confident, but like, hey, I got to guard all my defense. Like he had it all, everything.
Right. Hey guys, quick break. Talk to you about Pella Windows and Doors. And, you know, putting in some new windows or a new door, it can be really exciting, but it can be a little intimidating because sometimes you don't even know where to begin. Well, let me help you out. First of all, you got to go with Pella. And when you go with Pella, there are a couple of options you can go to get things started. First of all, you can schedule a free in-home consultation. That's right, free. You're going to get a Pella expert to take a look at your home and talk to you. And they're going to be able to get a Phil Jackson-esque game plan for you that fits your budget, your home, your wants, and your needs. That's one option. Another option, you can head out to the showroom. And the showroom's really cool, man. They can show you all the different window and door solutions they got. Sometimes it helps to actually see the window, see the door, open it, close it to get a better feel of exactly what you are putting into your home. Showroom is also a great place to start. In any direction you go, just know Pella's going to take great care of you, and they got a variety of products and can 100% provide window and door solutions to any home. And you're going to be working with great people the entire time. Give me a call, 402-493-1350. That's 493-1350. Or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. Back to yours truly and Bo Robert Roode recapping the Last Dance Michael Jordan documentary. The other thing that and we'll get to Scotty here in a second, but the other thing that I thought is jumping out at me is the importance of Phil. Of Phil, like, and we knew about this. He's a Zen master and all this stuff. But like the ability to, you know, he didn't have to worry about Michael staying locked in, but like the ability to reframe and refocus and recalibrate, not rest on what you've done. You know, like that stuff. That's how the teams that win again.
Yeah.
Like you have to have a leader that understands the importance of that. And then I think he also clearly had, and I think Paxson said it, Kerr said it, like that Phil's ability to manage all these personalities and manage all this drama, manage the spotlight, manage all that stuff. Like we talk about Jordan and the players being able to handle it. It's a lot for Phil to fucking handle too. And Phil's doing it. I was just, that was something, another thing that kind of jumped out at me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Phil was the perfect personality type because he's so, I mean, laid back's not maybe the right word, but it's just he's so thoughtful almost.
Right.
That like he's not an overreactor, and for that type of, you know, personality groups, you got to have somebody that almost reins it in, not, you know, amps it up.
The other thing too, talking about the flashbacks, how the mistrust and not being on the same page between Krause and Jordan happened right after his foot injury. So we're talking, that was his second year in the league.
Yeah.
He hurts his foot. He rehabs against the teams. I mean, I think he went back to North Carolina and played without them knowing and all that stuff. And he's on that. I mean, all this stuff with the minutes restriction.
Well, like, here's where I'll now be Jerry Krause's defender. I'll be his public defender here. Like, I understand this is the greatest basketball player ever. Like, it's not worth him getting hurt. I understand.
I didn't realize how close this foot injury was to being like a career ender.
Maybe it wasn't as serious as they were making.
Back in the 80s, they were like, have a Big Mac, a Whopper, and we have Pizza Hut for you.
So what we're going to do is we're going to put you in these low-top Converses. They're great for foot injuries. That's what we've been told.
Low-top. Jordan, I want you to wear Birkenstocks.
Low-top Converse with a real hard box. Those are how we solve the foot injuries.
Oh, so medicine was not near as good as it was.
But. Okay, so we'll defend Jerry, but here's where Jerry, again, it's an ego thing, where if he's telling the coach if Jordan plays 1 second over, 14. And there's 30 seconds in the game, so if the coach feels like he can't put his best player in for another 30 seconds after he just played 7 minutes, it's like, look, like, now you're just
being ridiculous.
You are the problem now, Jerry. Like, he's making himself the issue, which is like, that to me tells me that like that guy is putting himself over
right.
Like the bigger picture.
Well, yeah. Think about, like, I'm just trying to think of what an analogy would be. You know, think if the Dallas Mavericks are trying to make the playoffs and they have 13 seconds left, 14 seconds left or whatever, and they don't put Luka Doncic in the game where they're trying, you know what I mean? Like, that's what this was.
It's like, just
this
one is, of those, like, that's a personality issue created by management that didn't need to happen.
Right.
Like, you got to be able to trust your coach to be like, look, I'm not going to play him more than 14 minutes unless this crazy situation happens and, like, Jordan went off, he's shooting like crazy, and there's 30 seconds left. Play him 30 seconds.
Yes. And, but I guess what, like, he's a guy, Jordan, obviously, the only thing he cares about is winning, and that was where you have a guy in manage. I think that's where some of the animosity was built, where it's like he made, at that point he was like, I don't get it. Like, I'm like, we got to win. But all that set up what was pretty cool to flashback to his very first playoff experience. Goes for 49 on the 86 Celtics. The 86 Celtics are
maybe the best team in the 80s.
Yes. And I, like, to me, like, I, you probably would say, what was Magic's best team was 87, probably?
Yeah.
To me, the, and you take your pick, like, I think 96 Bulls are the best to me. But then, to me, then it's 86 Celtics, 87 Lakers, then you throw the Warriors in there, but like, they're in the pantheon. The 86, yeah. So like, so here's a young Jordan. How cool were those? Now, we've seen some of the highlights, but to get the extended and then
you got a lot of the highlight. Like, more the ones you didn't see, but you're like, whoa.
He goes for 49 in game one and then goes for 63 in game two. And here's what's crazy. The Bulls lost both games. But the, what was great was hearing how Ainge talked about how mad Walton was at him for getting switched on him and fouled out. Like,
sports fans, like the real diehards, like they, like this is what's so good about this documentary is you're getting all the little nuggets.
Yes.
Like, we know the base story. Like, we all know the base stories. Like, we know Jordan got 63. We know this.
Yes.
But, like, the little nuggets, like, he's golfing with Ainge. Like, the little stories.
He tells Ainge to tell DJ, I got something for I got something for your boy tomorrow.
He fouls out DJ. He fouls out Walton. Like, that's the stuff that's so fun.
And, you know, I didn't know he made a free throw with basically no time on the clock to send the game into OT. Like, I didn't know that about the 63-point game.
You just, like, we've seen so many of these things and just, like, a 2-second clip. Remember when Jordan went for 63 and it shows the
scissor between the legs, jump over Bird.
That's it, right?
Right.
Like, everything Jordan has done such an amazing job of basically saying, like, I'm not doing a bunch of interviews. We're not going to deep dive. Like, so the mystique of Michael Jordan is as high as it's ever been because he keeps himself away from the public, like, in a way that people now just don't do. Like, LeBron, we love LeBron, but, like, they go through everything with LeBron, very in depth. The next day, they'll have 10 breakdowns.
Let's have a retrospect on what you did 4 minutes ago.
It's like,
I started this podcast, and I knew that. Like, but that's what it's now. We don't let this is like a should be like the poster child for why everybody needs to let it fester and marinate and like let like we don't need to recap everything.
It's like the people that like. You know, I don't know. They're like, you know, like when the Jersey Shore people put out their lifetime biography 2 years after the show airs. I'm like, you guys didn't. What is there to write about? Like, we saw the show. You don't need to write your autobiography when you're 25 years old. Like Michael Jordan is. I think he's done a good job. Like let the story be told like later on. Like you don't get. It's just some of it's too fast where you're just like, guys, let's not do this.
The one thing that doesn't make sense about Michael Jordan's personality to me is he's such this assassin, serial killer competitor. I have a hard time wrapping my head around the whole like going and playing golf with Danny Ainge. You know what? Like, Not that we have to make a mountain out of a molehill, but that just doesn't seem to go in line. Like, he's such a, like, you're either with him or against him.
There's something that I've never understood about Michael, and it's that, and it's maybe because I'm not wired this way, but he has an energy level, I think, that is almost as superhuman as other gifts, where he wants to be gambling,
golfing, playing,
competing all day long.
Right.
And like, you know, his biggest torture was like he had to sit in the bench for a part of a season. That was torture.
Right.
And by the end of it, you know, like after he went to North Carolina to just like break the doctor's orders and play every day. Right. So I think Michael has some sort of inner energy level drive that like
it's an addiction.
He's got to be doing that all day long. And whoever will do it with him, which includes Danny Ainge before a game, right?
The other thing that in the flashbacks that was cool, talking about humanizing him. We all can recall that very first. Now, I've never walked into a hotel room with lines of cocaine, and like I've never been in a scenario like that. But we all can remember that, like when we're growing up, in that first eye-opening party you're really at, or eye-opening.
I know yours. We better not. High school.
Oh God!
We better not talk about that.
Yeah. Well, next question. But we all remember those are seminal moments in your life.
Here's why it was similar to you, because you and Mike were the same way. Like, you didn't drink.
No.
You were like, kid, all you want to do is play basketball.
Right.
And you go to a place where there's a bunch of people doing something that you don't do and you don't want to do. And that's a weird moment.
It's a really weird moment. And it was cool, though, to hear from, again, the human. Like, that's where you talk about how he's being on, to hear him be like, I'm a rookie. I'm trying to find all my teammates. I knock on the door. They open the door. They got weed over there. Girls over here. Lines of coke. And he was like, I got to get out of here. But we get, that's, everybody remembers, like, I don't care who you are. Like, that first real legit party you're at, you're a little rattled.
Dude, that
you're more than a little, right?
You're going like,
I am terrified right now.
It's like simultaneously, like a real party. It's amazing because it seems fun, but like those moments are a little scary though. Like what he was talking about was a little more.
That's what I'm saying.
That was a little bit more like,
yeah, like holy moly,
guys, this is like we're doing dangerous things here, you know.
But I thought that was another like moment that humanized him quite a bit.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it also showed that. If he would have made some other decisions that night, he may have never been Michael Jordan, right? Like they said, Michael Jordan for his first however many handful of years was like, it was orange juice and 7-Up.
Orange juice, 7-Up. He wanted to play cards. All he wanted to do was like watch movies and then go practice.
What he wanted to do was go be an assassin like he was. Like that was his vice was, I'm going to be the best basketball player and the best competitor to ever live. And so he just did that. Why other people might be out, you know, chasing girls, going to the club and smoking and drinking and doing coke.
Right.
Like when you get a whole bunch of money, people do that.
Right. And he stayed laser focused.
So the guy with the most talent, with the most competitive drive, chose to do things that only accentuated that.
Yeah.
And didn't take away from it by distracting him. So that was a little bit of an eye opener to me. I was like, oh, Michael had a choice there in 84 and it set him down the path to being the Michael Jordan we know.
I will say, and I'm kind of out on comparing eras of like players because it's just, it's so hard to do, but like all his old highlights still hold up. You know, a certain guy, like you'll watch like an old, like here's
Cousy.
Bart Starr. Boy, did he throw a laser in there. Bart's like,
yeah,
you know, and there's some highlights that you're like, geez, you know, like what you're about to watch is the best run in 1954.
Yeah, when
like,
you, but he zigs and zags and there he goes, and nobody's near him.
Bobby put down his Coca-Cola and his cigar, and he went out there and he rushed for 42 yards. You know, but all of his highlights, this dude is explosive and graceful, and he had something to him, like the whole like Air Jordan fly, like he was one of the only athletes to me that ever truthfully, like when he was in the air, he defied gravity.
Levitate's the right word. He like levitated.
It's unbelievable. He was just graceful through the air and the cradle dunks and all that stuff. It was great.
That's like the artistic stuff, though. You know, he was doing that cradle, like, you know.
In college.
He was doing it in games, but like it was, the body movement was like a work of art. Like it was like.
Right.
You know, that's the stuff you just go, he was born to do that.
You were put on earth to do it. Okay, we haven't even talked about Pippen. And then we'll wrap this up. So we're about 40 minutes in. We don't want to like sit here. We could be here till 2 o'clock in the morning if we wanted to. I mean, the Scottie Pippen story, I mean, because you can't tell, and I'm glad the people, like, you can't tell the Jordan story without Pippen. Like, they are linked, and Jordan said as much. I didn't realize, because when we were teenagers when all this stuff was going on. And one thing you don't care about is, like, salaries.
Not when you're a teenager.
When you're a teenager, you're just like, I mean,
you like who you like.
Yeah. Right? And you're like, that guy's good. So that's all that matters. I had no idea how criminally underpaid Scottie Pippen was. He was the 122nd highest paid player in the league. And
he was a top five player in the NBA.
Yes. And they had one champion. I mean, and he signed a 7-year, $18 million deal in 1991.
He must have signed it right before they won their titles and then just.
And the cool part, though, was like when you got into Scottie's background, you can understand why he said, like, you know, 12, he was one of 12 kids. His dad had a stroke and was in a wheelchair. His second oldest brother had a weird accident wrestling at school and was paralyzed. And so they're dirt poor from Arkansas. And all of a sudden someone slides over a piece of paper and all you're thinking about is $18 million and my family's good
forever. Yeah.
It helped me understand how in the moment, you know, even I think Jerry Reinsdorf was telling him, like, you shouldn't sign this. This isn't good for you. But, like, you have to understand where he was coming from. $18 million and a chance to just make it so my family's good. That's, like, you can understand that.
Yeah, I think there is something in sports and in managing that. Where, you know,
someone should have helped
him. You can't be, it just doesn't work it's too much testosterone. It's too much hierarchy, alpha dog stuff where you can't have the second best player making more than the best player.
Right.
In the same way, if you're the second best player, which Scotty was, not just on the team, but like he's in the top five in the league.
Right.
And he's got four or five other guys on his team.
Right.
Like Steve Kerr might be making more money than Scottie Pippen.
Right. He was the sixth. They said he was the sixth highest paid player in the Bulls.
Yeah. So that doesn't work in a team environment where it's like, it's cutthroat level, like elite, you know, alpha dogs going at it. Like, yeah, Michael's the alpha dog.
Right.
But like Scottie's the beta. Like, and that means Scotty needs to be number two paid, otherwise it's just human nature, right?
And the hard part too is then, because then obviously he signs the 7-year, $18 million deal, which makes him criminally underpaid for that long time. He can't renegotiate. They win all these titles, and you know, there's old saying like, don't just tell me you love me, show me you love me. Well, Krause didn't do either. He didn't show him he loved him with the contract or renegotiating, and he didn't tell him either by putting him on the trade block, by all, you know, like making him feel. So not only you feel some type of way because you're so underpaid, and whether you like it or not, that's a window into how someone views you and appreciates you.
Hey.
And then they're not even. Then they're putting you in trade rumors and all that stuff. Like,
yeah, I'll take Kobe Bryant's situation versus Scottie Pippen's. Right. I mean, obviously Kobe was the face of the franchise, but Kobe was way past his prime, and the Lakers gave him, you know, 2 years for like 40 some million. It was a bad contract for the Lakers, but the Lakers felt that they owed Kobe Bryant that, which, you know what? They did.
Yes.
And you know what? It was the right move. And so that's, you know, looking back, if Reinsdorf and Krause, which I don't think they will say this, I bet they'll say we did the right thing. He signed the contract. It is what the right thing to do is for the psychology of your team. You don't got to pay Scotty what Michael's making. You ain't got to pay him that much. But to just get him to the second highest paid is the right move for the team, not just for Scotty. That's the right move for the team.
Agree.
And Scottie Pippen. And you know what it does? It keeps the dynasty going until it piddles out. Maybe they never win again. But that, to me, in the long run, is the right thing to do for everybody.
Yes.
Including Krause and Reinsdorf. Because you know what? I don't care what it is. That team will make your organization so much money just by being itself.
The Bulls brand still has cachet because of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
It's
2020.
You can't tell me they're going to make less money if Scottie Pippen makes $4 million more a year.
Right.
you can't tell me that because I won't believe you.
Right.
Because they went to Paris and people are wetting themselves to see the Bulls. Like
right.
That was the impact the 90s Bulls were at. Like they were the Beatles. They were to that level. Like you don't tell the Beatles, I think you guys, we're going to rebuild the band. Like we're going to just hope McCartney comes back and we're going to just let everybody else walk. We're going to trade Lennon. Because we can get good value for him.
Ringo.
And you know
Ringo,
what?
Ringo, we're done with you.
Ringo doesn't even matter. And Harrison, like, you know, he's the Phil Jackson of this bunch. And it's like, no, we just don't get
think
along.
Think about that.
I don't get along with Harrison, so he's out.
Like, yeah.
What are you talking about?
Right.
Like, what are you talking about, Krause?
It's truthfully unbelievable. But that you can see all, one of the things that they're laying it out of, where these seeds have been planted along the way to help you better understand how unbelievable it is that at the beginning of the 1997 season, everyone knew that the Chicago Bulls were going to play their final season with that group. It's unbelievable.
It is.
It is. It's truthfully unbelievable. I mean, anything else where, the Pippen story, I mean, it's cool to, I mean, his story's unbelievable. I mean, to be a team manager, beg to be on scholarship, grow from 6'1 to 6'7 and all, like, it's.
See that, I didn't even know how good Scottie was in college. Like, to see the clips and to hear people like, Scottie Pippen was the deal. Like,
right.
I didn't think about that with Scottie. I thought he was very, like, underdeveloped.
Right.
Coming out of college, but.
Well, I did make the comment to you during, like, to me, I was like, how could you have had, you got a 6'7 athletic guy, why would you not have him at least be on the team?
Yeah,
that. But then they explained that he grew, and you're like, okay, now it makes sense. But, man, all I know, we're at about 48 minutes, so we'll wrap it up. But
I tell you what,
today was a special day because in the context of all this coronavirus, quarantine, no sports, no nothing. One of the things that I was thinking about this, one of the things that I miss, you know, if you're like, what do you miss about life as we knew it? Like one of the things I miss is having something to look forward to, you know, trip, hey, I'm going to dinner with Bo on Friday, or I'm doing, you know, just these things that you take for granted to have looking forward to. Today, I hopped out of bed more fired up because I had this to look forward to, this documentary. And even as I was eating dinner, it had like a, this shows how much we're starting. It had like a, almost like, dude, the Super Bowl starts in 2 hours.
I was more excited for this than I was the Super Bowl this year. And I'm not even kidding you. I was pumped up. Like, this feels like what a good live sporting event feels like, because we've been denied so much sports. Right. Like, Nick, this feels like we're getting sports.
I cannot wait to see what the ratings are. How many people watch this thing?
Is it every Sunday? So it's going to be
every Sunday for the next.
Oh, these guys! I'm so. It's like those things you go, I wish somebody would do something, and then they actually do it, and they're doing it the way you want it. It's almost hard to accept, like, they're giving it to us just how we want it, man.
I feel like I'm spoiled. Like, you know when something's so good, you're almost like, oh, my God, I shouldn't be getting this.
Still give ourselves lashes. What do
I? Yeah, like, I don't deserve this. We're not worthy.
We don't deserve sports. Why lie?
Michael Jordan. Shwing. Shwing. Oh, it's just so good.
Is he the coolest guy? I mean, he's so cool.
Like, even the first shot, he pulls up in a Corvette to the practice facility, gets out, and his sweats are pulled up to, like, basically his nipples.
Hey, that's how I roll at home,
and
dog.
He is just, like, he is the image. Like, if someone says, what's cool? Like, I'm not so sure the first image I don't think of is just Michael Jordan in any situation.
I think I'm going to walk into my house acting like Michael Jordan and see what my wife
I'm going to start tucking. I'm going to start pulling my pants up, like, an inch or two too high, tuck everything in.
Nick, I do that, and my wife, she thinks I'm a loser. Because I tuck in my sweats. I wear my sweats, and I tuck in my shirt to my sweats, and she thinks I'm a total loser.
I'm telling you.
But I think it's cool.
Jordan looks cool.
I always say, because I say Jordan always tucks in his sweatpants, his shirt to his sweatpants, and she goes, She goes, that's a bad look. And I go, no, it's cool.
You need to make her watch The Last Dance so she understands
she don't get it.
The genesis of the tuck. All right.
But I'm giving her Michael Jordan swag.
Oh, right now I just want to stick my tongue out and just swag on everybody. God, that's good. All right, people. This was part one. We got four more of these things. Clearly coming up in the next one, Bad Boy Pistons time.
Sharpen these things.
I mean, people are going to start getting elbowed next Sunday. And I cannot wait. So we're going to be doing, again, we're going to do this every single week here for the next 4 weeks. Bo, Slick Weezy, Nikki B, we will be here to recap this pod. So, I mean, you go tuck your shirt in and go home and get some sleep, and we'll do this again next week, my man, okay? All right, my thanks to Pella Windows and Doors. If you're thinking about a new window or a new front door, now is the perfect time. Give Pella a call at 402-493-1350 or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. We will see you next time on the Nick Bob Podcast. Production.